TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back to The Journey, everyone, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, guess what? I've taken up a new hobby, cheese making.
Wow. So that's who moved my cheese.
Yeah, it was me. I moved it because I'm going to replace it with some of the new cheese that I'm making.
Okay.
And I don't think you'll notice. I'm sure it's going to be totally safe to eat. I mean, how hard could it be to make cheese?
I don't know. Just make sure you don't cut it. So, you just want to take a bite off of it, Chris. So.
Yeah. Just a nibble.
Yeah.
All right. All right, everyone, we are going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Voyager
episode... This just in. This is the end of season one.
It's the end of season one.
Shocking.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the final episode...
And we get to talk about cheese.
...of season one, at least in the United States, because as I understand it, in the UK, they actually did air the next four episodes.
Interesting.
They got kicked over to season two as part of season one. And
those Brits always get the good stuff, you know? That's disappointing.
Yeah, including cheese. They have much better cheese, right?
Wensleydale! Yeah. So, sorry, I was doing a little Wallace and Gromit there. So,
yeah, exactly. All right, so here's a quick rundown of Learning Curve. When four Maquis crew members refuse to adapt to Starfleet protocols, Tuvok is handed the unenviable task of whipping them into shape. But while he struggles to understand why his time-honored methods and Vulcan charm aren't working, a more immediate threat is taking hold in Neelix's kitchen. Cheese! In his efforts to delight Ensign Ashmore with a taste from home, the self-proclaimed chef has been cultivating bacteria just below a vent that feeds into the ship's bioneural circuitry. Now the gel packs have a cold, and systems are failing one by one. It's time to get the cheese to sick bay, Matthew. But before we do that, we've got to go back to Janeway's Victorian Hollow novel and meet the Burley kids again. Aren't you excited about that?
Yay! Oh, Chris, so excited.
Yeah. All right. So, well, tell me what you think about the Burleys.
Man, Chris, I'm sorry, but I don't understand what they're trying to do here with Janeway in this Hollow novel. I think, in all honesty, it's one of those places where it's just entirely amiss all around. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that any part of it really makes sense. It's not the right story to be telling.
Yeah.
And the problem is that it just doesn't connect with anything in the rest of the episode. It really only is there to be like, oh, her Hollow novel gets interrupted. Don't worry. We'll never return to this the rest of the episode. It's fine. So it's just an incredibly strange thing to be doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit Janeway as a character. That's
right.
The thing I think that it just doesn't seem to fit her as a character. And that's what's really odd.
Yeah. Well, that's what we talked about before when they did it the first time. And here it really feels like they're just trying to force it. Like, okay, Janeway's got to have this Hollow novel that she escapes into. This is a thing that we're going to do. Like, we know it didn't work last time, but we're going to try again. And just like last time, we're going to tack it on to the beginning of an episode that it has no connection to whatsoever. So I actually wrote in my notes after they go to the credits and then they come back out, I wrote, "Captain's log, forget everything you saw in the cold open. This is a different story."
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it was interesting them that trying to find it. It felt like this. Look, we want to be more like TNG. That's their goal.
Yeah, right.
So we need Janeway to have some sort of hollow novel thing the way Picard did, right? Well, he had Sherlock Holmes.
That's exactly
and we had that on TNG with Data. And then we had Dixon Hill novels, you know, with Picard. So what do we do with Janeway? I know. Let's put her in like Victorian England. That'll work. And it's just an incredibly strange choice. It just doesn't really make, I think, any sense. And I'm not really sure what they're trying to do other than I can see, I guess, in some ways, the idea that they're trying to give her an outlet for her mothering, I guess. I don't know. It's just, it's a strange thing. So
I think that's a strange thing to do, though, because if you're going to have a female captain for the first time on a series, then you want her to be this leader. You don't need to put her in a situation where she's going to be the mother to these little kids. To me, it just sounds like counterproductive to what you're trying to do by having this strong woman as a leader of the crew. But the other thing about this that stood out to me, because later on in the episode, we end up in Shea Sandrine's with the pool table again. And I thought, okay, this is kind of odd. We have two separate holodeck simulations in one episode that have no connection to each other whatsoever. And has that happened before? So I really started trying to think about it. And the episodes I could think of, none of them fit this mold. There's Hollow Pursuits, where Barclay has different simulations of different crew members for his little fantasy land. So those are different ones. Here on Voyager, there's Worst Case Scenario, where Tuvok has the like a mutiny program, and then Seska reprograms it. And that's the same program, but with different outcomes to it. And then there's Emergence at the end of The Next Generation, where the ship's computer like mixes all these elements of different programs together. But normally you don't have, you don't like jump from completely different holodeck simulations. And especially when they don't have any connection to each other. And then one of them has no connection to the story at all.
Yeah, I think what's weird about this with Janeway's holo novel is the way in which it just never has any connection with anything, as you're mentioning. Mm-hmm. And that is just an incredibly odd choice to make. And I'm not sure exactly why they continue to choose to make it. And I think it's probably one of the reasons that it doesn't last.
Right. Yeah. Well, jumping into the real story here, let's go with the Maquis crew members and Tuvok's annoyance with them and all that stuff first, because that's what ends up being the A story for this. I think it's good that they did this story. The idea of Maquis crew members have trouble fitting in with Starfleet protocol, and maybe they need some training. But I think it's odd that it doesn't happen until now, because I did the calculations for the star dates, and I think it's like from Caretaker to here, I believe it was 194 days that have passed. It's like 6.5 months that have passed. And you would think that during that time, there would have been this type of program where Tuvok is going to put Maquis crew members who need additional support through some kind of boot camp or training or something. And maybe that happened off screen and we don't know about it for some people, and these people just can't fit in, but it's certainly not the way it's presented here. It's presented like, yeah, we've got this Maquis problem and I think we need to address it. And it feels like rather than this happening in the final episode of season one, that's something that should have happened probably in like episode 5 or 6, would have made a lot more sense for the story.
I mean, absolutely. I think it would have made sense. story-wise, it would have made sense for the chronology of the series. And I think it's one of those places where, you know, Voyager, because they made the decision that they were not going to focus really on this split between Maquis and Starfleet for too long, it felt weird, kind of like, I mean, you know, in the US, this is the end of the season, and we are going to revisit mm-hmm. this idea at the end of the season after supposedly we've been with these characters for like 6 months. Like you said, it's a strange choice, and I don't get it. And so I think it's one of those things where it would have possibly worked then. It doesn't quite work in this episode because it just feels too little too late in the storytelling mm-hmm. department. I think, you know, now that we're just going to say this is the end of season one. Fans would have to wait another, you know, few months for you to get back into episodes for season two. And so the promise of Voyager here, I think the way in which this season was handled and ending on this episode with a storyline that should have taken place within 3 or 4 episodes of the first episode just feels like, to me, a big red flag of saying we don't know exactly what to do with this show.
Yeah, we knew what we wanted to do with it, but we got cold feet, and now exactly. we're trying to figure out.
I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah, we got cold feet. We don't, and it's very odd mm-hmm. because again, I don't think that this is a bad storyline. You know, is it?
No, it's not a bad storyline.
Absolutely not, because we've kind of seen this type of thing play out in, you know, Lower Decks.
Well, there's a reason for that. These are the same writers who wrote Lower Decks. Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about it? Like, when you rewatch it, do you feel like it's okay? Does it hold up enough? Or are you just kind of left in this spot where you're just like, I'm not quite sure what we're trying to accomplish with this episode at this point in the season?
Yeah. Well, I guess there are two paths here. So when it first aired, I remember watching it when it first aired, and I thought, it's kind of a fun episode. Especially because of the cheese, which we'll talk about in a bit. You know, the cheese saves the episode. If the cheese beep story wasn't in here, I really think this episode would be forgettable. But it was fine as an episode at the time that it aired. And when I watch it now, especially because over the years, my frustration with the way they handled the conflict that they had set up, and like I said, they got cold feet and they didn't really explore what they had set up mm-hmm. with Starfleet and the Maquis. I guess I get a little, I don't enjoy this story as much. And there are a few reasons. Like, I think that the Maquis crew members come off as a bit too whiny and indignant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they say like, well, we understand the situation and we're going to do our best, but they also come off like, you know, if you had a company, they would be the 4 employees who just really don't want to follow the rules and don't want to do what the manager asks, don't care about corporate protocol at all, or they're going to be like that. Yeah. And I think that we'll talk about Chakotay a little bit more as well, but I feel a little bit like, if these people served under Chakotay on his ship, I think they would not be quite as much like this, just because I don't think Chakotay's like this. And I think that there's an influence that comes to you from the person who's leading you.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I mean, you get it a bit. You know, Seska's kind of like indignant about this kind of stuff as well, but not to this level. This felt a little bit more like high schoolish behavior.
Yeah, because they felt like children.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they come off like
that.
They
just feel like children that are like, dude, just grow up, man. Like, you gotta grow up.
Yeah. I mentioned these are the same writers who wrote Lower Decks on The Next Generation, and I think you can see how much better they handled their characters in the Next Generation episode
100%
than they did here. So, and then Tuvok himself, I suppose that it feels true to who the character is, but I don't think Tuvok comes off well as a character in the way that he treats these crew members. And then the other thing about Tuvok that's really weird here is that the whole setup of the series is that Tuvok was a spy on Chakotay's ship.
Right.
And that means he was on this small ship for some period of time with all of Chakotay's crew. But he doesn't seem to know these four people. He doesn't know anything about them. And I think that's weird that he seemed, these are like strangers to him. And then he's been assigned to whip these four Maquis into shape. And I think that's like an obvious writing point that was missed here. Like, he doesn't need to like deliver a dossier about all of them, but it would come off more believable if he at least acknowledged that he knows these people. And it's kind of an odd bit of the story.
Yeah, it almost feels too like a strange choice to have Tuvok do this when it probably should be Chakotay doing this. You know, Chakotay was in the academy,
yeah.
So he knows what's required of himself and from Starfleet officers. And I think it would have been interesting because it would have given us an opportunity to explore why Chakotay is making the choices that he is here. Why is Chakotay choosing to put himself under Janeway's command like this and make these decisions? And I think it would have been to watch that pushback and that you know, the push and pull you would have gotten with these characters as well as with Chakotay. I just think it would have been a lot more interesting as a story. Mm-hmm. And I think Tuvok, who has experience with so many Starfleet cadets over his years, he should understand human beings better than this. And he just comes off as kind of dense, which is not what you want from your character in this way. And it's a little frustrating that that's the case. You know, he should have experience with, right? If we've had characters like this in Lower Decks previously, who have made it through Starfleet protocols and training and in the academy, he would have taught people like that. And so therefore, we should be able to have Tuvok not just be so just like odd in this episode that he can't understand these people.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it might be that one thing we forget now because it's been so long is that this was the first case of them really writing a pure Vulcan as a lead bridge crew member in Star Trek. So we were used to Spock being half Vulcan and half human. And so here we've got, oh, Tuvok, he's purely Vulcan. So maybe you write him in this very rigid, inflexible way to set him apart from Spock. But you would think that as someone who had to go through Starfleet Academy and spend a lot of time around humans, that even a pure Vulcan would understand humans, and not just humans. I mean, we're dealing here with a human and a Bajoran and a Bolian, but at least understand how other species react to things emotionally and all.
Yeah. I mean, again, if he's taught at the Academy for a long period of time, that would only make sense.
Yeah. The origin of this, why is it Tuvok? From what I understand, is because we're dealing with Wilkerson and Matthias here, who wrote Lower Decks. They had Ensign Torek there, who's the Vulcan. And so they got this idea of what would it be like if we explored a Vulcan in more detail and a Vulcan instructor. And they pitched this idea for Voyager. And that was kind of like the seeds of it. And it made sense with Tuvok's role on the ship that he would do the training and all. But Yeah. So Chakotay, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if I think Chakotay would have been the right choice to do the training, because I don't think that the crew members, and we see this in Dalby, I don't think that they would have listened to him the way that they would need to, because they just feel like, oh, Chakotay, you know, he's going to have our back. We don't really have to take this too seriously, which is why I like that Chakotay comes in and just decks Dalby.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, great. That was a great moment in the episode. And I think it was a great character moment for Chakotay too, because one thing that it's not really a core part of the story at all, but I think that an important part of this episode for me is the character development for Chakotay in particular, and for B'Elanna, that we see how they've assimilated into the crew and they understand their roles and they understand the importance of what they're doing. But they're also the two who actually have Starfleet experience and who are at the academy. Yeah. So I think for him, it's easy for him to look at the situation, agree, okay, I have to be Janeway's first officer. We've got a mission here. We've got to get home, which is something that these other people who he had assembled for his Maquis crew can't really understand. Yeah. But I think that having that moment where we get to see him just tell his former crew, look, you guys, like you said earlier, you guys have to grow up. You know, this is the situation we're in right now, I think is a good character moment for Chakotay.
It's interesting because I feel like one of the things that we're kind of coming to in this episode is that a lot of it feels like it's not working the way they intended it, and that it almost feels as though this is an episode that needed to be put through another round of rewrites to really get it to be stronger. But at the same time, I think this is also a story to which doesn't quite seem to fit again with where we are in the season. So it almost feels like they needed to find another B-side story to, or I guess they needed to find another A-side story to go with the B-side story, which is this cheese. So, you know, well, Chris, say cheese and die. So, because who knew that cheese could cause such horrible problems on a starship?
Right. Yeah. Well, interestingly, you say that the whole training thing was the B story of the original pitch. I don't even know what the A story was, but I know that it was the B story. And then it got flipped around. And then they need to find, like you said, something to go with it. And so they end up with the cheese. And but the cheese is, you know, obviously it's the most memorable part. There are two things that are memorable for me in this episode. One, and I don't know why, it's always stuck in my head, is Tuvok turning up the gravity when they do the running. And the other one is obviously the line everyone knows, get the cheese to sick bay. But I thought was a great storyline for Neelix, because it's exactly the kind of thing that Neelix would do. Doesn't ask permission to do anything, starts cultivating bacteria to make cheese, and does it right underneath a vent where all the spores are going to go up and get into the system. But the other thing I liked about it is that they introduced in Caretaker that this new class of starship has these bioneural gel packs in the circuitry, and it gives the ship some new capabilities. And I liked the idea of that when they introduced it, because it shows that as advanced as Starfleet technology is, they're still innovating. They're still advancing the technology, and they're trying these experimental things. And you do think, like, okay, well, if the ship is somewhat alive, if it has biology in it, that opens up a lot of ideas for stories. But then they don't do anything with it for the whole season. And then finally we get here, and they actually do give us a story. And it's a fun one. It's just like, hey, you know, the ship is sick. It's got a cold.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I am way more critical of this than you are, because you're really seeming to like it. And I think that...
I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I think that this episode to me proves, or it feels as though to me that the series feels bankrupt right now. They just don't know what to do that's interesting. Because this, to me personally, this is not interesting. I think it's incredibly silly, and it I think, and on top of the other side of the episode, which is not working for me very well,
mm-hmm.
I just don't like it. I'm sorry. I don't like the cheese aspect. I think the idea of playing around with the bio gel pack, so I guess that's kind of interesting. But yeah, it almost just felt like we need a bottle episode. We need to figure out how we can save some money here at this point in the season. And we're going to do it in kind of the silliest way possible. And I just, yeah, I think everything about this is just, it feels so laughable that it's hard to take serious. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. It feels so laughable. It's just kind of hard to take the idea seriously. And therefore it hurts the episode, because the other side of the episode isn't strong enough to keep my interest. I think that's what it is for me.
I see. All right. Well, those sound like final thoughts, actually. So what's your rating for this one? And then I'll give you my final thoughts with a few answers to that.
I think this is an incredibly weak episode of Voyager, which is disappointing. It's one of those things to which, especially too, and I remember watching Voyager right when it, you know, as it's airing, and this is the end of the season mm-hmm. for us in the US, and it's just an incredibly bummer of an episode to end the season on, because there's absolutely nothing that's happening. There's nothing interesting mm-hmm. about this. And it's like, it kind of soured me at that point on Voyager a little bit, just because,
oh, really? Okay.
You know, this is the end of the season. And, you know, we're used to at this point with Star Trek, you know, we've had all these years of TNG. We've had a couple of years now of Deep Space Nine. They usually wrap up seasons interestingly. And this just kind of ends with a, and that's how I'm going to rate this episode.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, Jerry Taylor has said something similar about the end of the season. I had read that she said we basically just kind of disappeared because, you know, it wasn't a season ending episode. It just kind of was there, and then we just kind of disappeared into the summer. So the whole first season, the plotting of it and how they wrapped it up and all was just, I read something about how it was going to be difficult for UPN to set up and promote a two-part episode over that summer, and so they didn't want to do a cliffhanger like we were getting used to in The Next Generation, which just sounds, I guess it makes sense a little bit in that this was the first year of UPN. You know, UPN started with Caretaker, and so they're not even one full year into being on the air yet as a network, and maybe they weren't prepared for stuff, but it's not like they didn't have plenty of experience dealing with Star Trek, and it's not like Paramount didn't have experience making entertainment. You'd think they could figure out their staffing and processing and procedures and all for that if that were really what happened. But anyway, I mean, I guess my final thoughts on it is that I feel like the cheese part is fine. I don't mind, you know, we've always had this kind of humor here and there in Star Trek, especially, you know, I could see this kind of thing happening on the original series where you've got some weird thing like this that's affecting the crew. Maybe it wouldn't affect the ship because it doesn't have gel packs, but I think it saves the episode. The cheese part does. I think the other part, the A story of the episode, trying to get Maki to understand how they need to function on a Starfleet ship, that's actually a serious thing that needs to be addressed. And the way that they go about it, I think, doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes off, like I said earlier, they come off whiny. It's all, it's almost like it's some kind of high school thing going on. I don't think Janeway, as the captain, should have put Tuvok in charge of it, because she should be able to, she knows him. That's part of the whole storyline, right? Is that they've been friends for so long. And so she knows what Tuvok's like. She's got to know as a leader that this is not going to work.
Right.
Right. He's not going to be up for this task. So, yeah, I think it's an idea that the writers had, and they just, yeah, didn't pull it off very well. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you and ask you if you liked it is, did you like the after school special ending? Lieutenant, if you can learn to bend the rules, I guess we can learn to follow them. And I just felt like, oh, I learned a lesson today.
Yeah, I was just wondering when, you know, somebody was going to be stuck on speed, you know, and they were just going to be so scared, you know. So, yeah, I think that's another place where, again, this episode just kind of feels like a wah, wah. In every aspect, especially since we're ending the season. And that just, like, I love the idea in the sense of for that storyline that you know, Tuvok is going to show that the prerogative of the commanding officer is what to do, and their crew is valuable and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just like, okay, all right. Yeah, it did really very much feel like an after school special, you know, on a very special episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And like you just said, not only are we ending the episode on that line, we're ending the season on that line. And then we're all going on summer break down to Panama City or whatever. So, yeah. And maybe we can learn to follow the rules together.
Is that when they create you know, the holodeck program, you know, with the at the resort?
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. All right. So I'm going to give this episode 6 Circassian figs. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Learning Curve and cheese. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website. Our new website is actually online now. So the URL is tfm.fan. That's tfm.fan/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose to the journey, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not training for your next marathon under super extra gravity, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, I could do that in my sleep. So you could find me all over social media under the name MattRussing02. Of course, you can find me here on the network outside all this great Star Trek talk that you and I do, Chris. In the 602 Club, talk about all the franchises we love outside of Star Trek, so everybody can check me out there. And over on the Nerd Party Network, a couple of shows. One is called Outpost, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then I'm on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just what's causing that smell, oh wait, it's just the Limburger cheese that you're eating, where can people find you?
Yeah. I should probably put that in the fridge, I think.
How long has that been out again?
Oh, you know, it's only like maybe 4 or 5 days.
I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. So, yeah, when I'm not choking on that smell, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you. Larry Nemechek and I have some new Ready Rooms out, and you can also find me in the back catalog across many, many shows from the past 15 years talking about many topics in the Star Trek universe. So check those out if you want to hear my thoughts on other things. You can also find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky's where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere. So please do drop me a note. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your support. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, it's time for a summer break of sorts, I guess, before we come back into season two. But when we kick off season two, we will be solving some of the biggest mysteries in world history as we talk about the 37s.
Well, Chris, that sounds great. So set course for home.
Well, Matthew, it's time for a summer break of sorts, I guess, before we come back into season two. And I forgot what the episode is. Hold on.
The 37s?
It's the 37s, I think. So,
crazy that I remember that.
Well, it's because you're a big Amelia Earhart fan, right?
That's what it is.
Yeah. Or you like playing the banjo.